The opinions of Fred Fowler and AJ Hoffman don't reflect the views of Gal Media. Parental discretion is advised. KFNC Mont Belvieu, Houston, a Gal Media station.
Sports,
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 sports.
So they just sit there and talk about sports?
Yeah, and it was not a great weekend. Lots to get to. Let's do this. It's a Monday on the Blitz.
Shall we begin?
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And The Blitz is on for a Monday. Welcome to the greatest show in the history of the known universe. With me, Fred Fowler, the Falcon. A.J. Hoffman, Chocolate Braveheart. Aaron Rabel, the Voldemort. If you want to get in today, 713-780. ESPN is your number, 713-780-3776. You can also get us on the Blitz Facebook page. Find the Blitz, send a message. Aaron likes it, he'll read it. There's Twitter, at Fred Fowler, F-A-O-U-R. At AJ is the real, at Aaron is Blitz, at Degenerates975. You can text the show, you know the number for that. And if you want to watch us on the Twitch channel and comment there, all good. You can do that as well. It's a Monday, a lot to get to. We're going to have some guests today. But obviously a very unpleasant day yesterday in the sports world.
Yeah, that's listen, man, I was trying to think of one and I ended up drawing a blank, so maybe you've got one, but has there been a sports death in your lifetime that caused such a ripple effect of just like, what? That's unbelievable. The only one I could think of, and it predates me, like it predates my prime sports watching days, but I know when Pistol Pete died, it was like, man, that was way too young, you know? I mean, it was one thing, like when Wilt Chamberlain died, I still remember it being like, wow, Wilt died? And he was in his 60s. This is like a 41-year-old man, you know, still, you would think with a lot of life to live. And it goes away so fast. And it's not that, you know, the other people in the helicopter, their lives meant any less. They didn't. But everybody seemed affected by this like nothing I've ever seen before.
I'll take it a step further. I'm not sure I can remember. I think the thing that stuck out to me that it reminded me of wasn't even sports, because when
I had something like Tupac and Kurt Cobain jumped to mind for me, like of my generation.
Yeah. And I was thinking of people like Michael Jackson or Prince.
Yeah.
But those guys, and I don't mean to diminish anything, but they were performers. Those are guys who die from drugs all the time. So it's not like you're shocked when you hear it. To me, the only thing that I had this kind of impact was Princess Di.
That was big too. Yeah,
and, maybe it's, and that was the only one I could think of. And but as far as just sports icons, I mean, we're going way back. Roberto Clemente.
Yeah,
that one I was a kid for.
Yeah, see, that's one I thought of, and I didn't live through it, so I couldn't speak to what. And obviously, social media being what it is now makes a difference, certainly. But I mean, it's just it's felt by everybody, and even me. Like, I wasn't a Kobe Bryant fan. I've never been a Kobe Bryant fan. I mean, I love his competitiveness. I thought that was like just it was really cool to watch. I was never that guy, but even I was like, oh my god. And like you read the interviews after, and there was people who were like, well, he shouldn't have been flying a helicopter.
Got it.
That, which is dumb.
Yeah, and have you ever driven a car in Los Angeles? It's a hell of a lot more dangerous, well, just like driving one here is.
One thing, I was watching a video and someone had asked him why he flies a helicopter everywhere. And it really tore me up because he was saying, basically, it's the only way I've got time to spend with my kids.
Yeah.
He said, because if I, you know, I drop the kids off at school and then I go to practice. And if I drive to practice all day and drive home, there's no way I can pick my kids up from school. And he said, my wife had said she can pick them up. And he said, no, I'm on the road. You know, I don't always have the chance to pick them up. When I'm here, I'm going to take a chance to pick them up every chance I get. And so he bought a helicopter, had a full-time pilot, basically. I mean, this isn't, I don't know if the accident was avoidable or not. Like from what I saw, like the fog was super bad. The pilot misjudged where he was, you know, where the mountain was or whatever, and ran into the mountain going faster than he probably should have been going. I don't know how much warning they had that they were going to crash. I like to think that it happened pretty quick.
Yeah.
There wasn't like a 2-minute buildup of like, oh God, we're going down. Like that's like the worst case scenario, I would say. But I understand why he took helicopters everywhere. And you can say helicopters are dangerous. Cars are dangerous.
Cars are a lot more dangerous.
Bicycles are dangerous.
I've almost been killed on a bike. I've almost been killed in my car, and I've almost been killed walking.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's just, and it's just as bad in LA as it is here. I mean,
it's worse there, probably.
Probably. Well, the traffic's certainly worse. And I mean, if you're saving 2 hours of your life, I think that's just a silly take. There's a lot of silly takes around this. And I want to get to some of the media coverage later because I was disappointed in that. But it was, what really, really got to me the most, and I wasn't a real big Kobe fan either. I wasn't one of those guys that, a lot of our listeners grew up, this was the guy. But I remember, I remember his first game when he was 18, well, first playoff game when he's 18 years old and he's out there jacking up threes with Del Harris as his coach and not making them because there was nobody else on the team that could score. And I'm just thinking, man, this guy's going to be really good. He's going to get ripped for this, but he's going to be really, he's 18 years old. And then it's whenever something like this happens, you feel like you know the person because you've been following him for so long. And I mean, it really, the impact that it had on people, it didn't surprise me at all. And the reactions around the world. And I was out at the racetrack doing that tournament. And when I found out about it, I wasn't even looking at my phone or Twitter because I was trying to focus. And a couple of people texted me. And actually, several people text me. I'm like, what? This can't be real. And so the first thing I start doing is like, well, I check on Josh and see if he's available to write something. And he's in a movie. And thankfully, shout out to Jermaine, who wrote a really nice piece. He was able to get it up on the website. But the thing that really hit me the most is when this stupid report came out that all four of his kids were on the plane with him.
Yeah. And this is the be first, not be right.
Yeah. And I've got a lot to say about that at some point today because I've been beating this drum forever and nobody listens. And it's time that somebody out there listen. But what really hit me were the kids on that thing. Because and you as a parent, too. It's your worst nightmare.
The worst.
And even whether you're part of it or not, the fact that something could happen to your kids who haven't had a chance to do anything yet, man. I mean, 13 years old, you're just figuring out what life's going to be and where your future is going to be. And that really, really hit me hard. And yeah, I was depressed about it all afternoon and really all day today.
People started, people are trying to give me some names that maybe impacted people as much. And again, respectfully, I think all of these are not as widespread as this Kobe thing is. Like Lamont says, Lynn Bias was a very highly rated prospect. He wasn't a guy who had just finished a Hall of Fame career.
Right.
He wasn't.
It was shocking because of his age.
Right.
And then the whole thing comes out. Well, he did cocaine for the first time, which is what scared. It had an impact on me because it scared me off of cocaine because I figured I'd be the guy who did it one time and that would be me. I'd be Lynn Bias. But yeah.
Lynn Bias should have died when I was a kid.
Somebody mentioned Selena.
I mean, outside of Texas, do you think it was really felt like that? Payne Stewart?
No. And that one, actually, he was supposed to be at the Tour Championship, I think, the week after here in Houston. So it was a big story here. But, yeah, I don't think it. And then somebody brought up JFK Jr., which my wife brought up this morning. And I hadn't really thought of that but it was surprising. And it was the same kind of thing, flying a plane in bad weather.
But, like, what was JFK Jr., what was he known for? Like, being somebody's son.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, don't get me wrong. The guy had a successful career on his own, but he was
just not then starting to get involved with he was just starting to get involved publicly,
right?
But so he hadn't really done anything yet.
Foster said Steve McNair, again, probably more here in Tennessee than in other places.
That one was still pretty shocking, but I don't
but
think
again,
it was
Steve
this
McNair
level.
Not on that level. Rocky Marciano. Yeah, I don't know about that one. I couldn't speak to it.
Dale Earnhardt Sr. That was
that one's close.
Yeah, I think
but
so.
But I mean, obviously, because the NBA is just so much bigger than NASCAR.
Yeah.
And then Carl says, as a Redskins fan, Sean Taylor, but that's as a Redskins fan. Right, I mean, right. And he was big, but.
Yeah, I mean, but that was the thing. I was, because I was thinking about this morning, and I've covered a lot of these, unfortunately. And the one that I just kept coming back to that had the impact that this seemed to have was Princess Diana. That was the only one I could come up with. And because people, for some reason, I don't care about English royalty, but that death really, especially the way it happened too. But yeah, that's maybe Earnhardt's close.
I get in sports to me, that's as close as you're going to find, at least in my lifetime. But I mean, I just think that, I mean, people across all sports were like, football players, baseball, like all sports, Kobe was like an idol to these guys. That's what I don't know that about Dale Earnhardt, Sr. I don't know that like NBA players were like, man, this is what I love about Dale Earnhardt. Like, I think Everybody looked at Kobe's competitive fire and was like, man, I wish I that's something that I want to try to emulate. And I think Joe Burrow tweeted out today that he got his competitiveness from Kobe. That's like, so it's just massive. It goes beyond sports, obviously. It's like it's the story of the day everywhere, including MSNBC, which we'll discuss later.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty unbelievable, man. And, I think again, like kids being involved just makes it all the worse.
Yeah, like I said, that's the thing that really, because, and especially, this basketball team they had and all these parents traveling with their kids, and you do this all the time with yours for baseball.
I just don't have a helicopter.
No, but I mean, you could just as easily get run into by a semi and it would be, I mean, it's always just heartbreaking to me when kids die and stuff like this. It really is.
And I think there's something to be said about, Mark just said, he said, I don't remember his name, but he's talking about Pat Tillman.
Yeah.
Pat Tillman was big on, I mean, it's similar. I would say that's pretty similar to this. That's how impactful it was.
Yeah, he was a transcendent guy.
Which is crazy. And Pat Tillman wasn't a star at the level of Kobe Bryant, but because he sacrificed his career to join the military, that probably puts that on that level, I would say.
Yeah, I think so. And then Steven said, I went around for Stevie Ray Vaughan. What was the reaction like? In Texas, it was like
huge.
This.
Yeah.
But I around the country. And the same thing with like Buddy Holly and Richie Valens.
But I do think guys like Kurt Cobain and, Michael Jackson, although Michael Jackson and Prince were of an age where it's not crazy to think they could die. But like Kurt Cobain and Tupac were so young that it was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Really? And that's the first thing I thought when I saw it on Twitter that Kobe Bryant died in a helicopter crash. I was like, is this real? And it turns out it was.
Man, people throw a lot of names out. And to me, I mean, those are individual impact names. Hey, to me, yeah, Chris Cornell had a huge impact on me, but that's
not as widespread.
No, definitely.
I'm telling you, it's very rarefied air that someone that famous and that, and we'll go on the other, we got to get on the other side of this break, but it really seems like Kobe, who obviously had personal problems early in life, like his second act as a dad seems like he had really made himself into like a family man, and it makes it all the more depressing.
It was a redemption story. It really was in a lot of ways. All right, quick break. It's the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
This is the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
All right, guys, I got to tell you about ProDunkHoops.com. ProDunkHoops.com, that's where you go to get the best basketball goals on the planet. And these goals manufactured exclusively by Hoop Sporting Equipment. They're the best on the market. How are they the best? Well, thickest steel of any goal on the market, 75% thicker than the best brands in the big box stores. A tempered glass backboard, so strong, Hoops guarantees if it breaks or cracks for any reason, they'll replace it for free. And a rust armor finish, 30 years maintenance free, perfect for the Gulf Coast weather. And they've got a design to fit your home, your driveway, your backyard, whatever. They've got a fully portable goal. And I'm telling you, your kids being outside is the number one benefit of this. And I can't keep my kids off this thing. My older one plays at 10 feet. My younger son complains, I can't make baskets at 10 feet. So he by himself cranks it down. He can get it down to 5 feet. I think he plays at like 6 or 7 feet, but any age can play. They can all make baskets, and that's what it's all about. Get your new hoops goal today. See it all at produnkhoops.com. That's produnkhoops.com, 281-351-9822.
You are listening to The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. 713-780-3776 is your number if you want to get in. And, you know, it's one of the things about something like this, and you know, kind of compare it to the Tiger Woods thing when that happened. People feel like they know somebody. And I always compared Tiger's thing to, well, if you're in your church community, your pastor got involved in some kind of a controversy like that. It's a huge thing to the whole church. Well, to Tiger, that was kind of the whole world. And that's sort of how I feel about this. I mean, somebody, everybody feels like they know him. There's always some moment or something that helped them remember him. And I think that's why it's had the impact that it's had. And it's a, you know, it always sucks when people die. Unfortunately, we're all heading that direction. You know, there's, you know.
Well, you especially.
Well, as they say in Fight Club, on a long enough timeline, everyone's life expectancy is zero. So, but, you know, you hate to see it happen to somebody that young. And again, the kids on there and the other people on that flight, it just makes me profoundly sad. So, and the way the media handled this also makes me very, you know,
well, I want to talk about that more in the show. I mean, later on in the show, that's another full segment or two.
Yeah, exactly. I'd like some room on that one because you know my opinions on this.
Oh yeah.
And, I do want to, before we move on to some other stuff and we get back to this, want to say congratulations to Sam Houston Race Park yesterday. They had a just terrific day of racing and, record crowds. It was just awesome. And the handicapping tournament, I always tell you, I'm either going to win, be first or bottom five. It was a bottom five day.
Oh, no.
And actually, the reality was...
You blame Lawyer Dave or Rogelio?
No. This was... Well, I blame myself because they actually asked me, did I want to not put my picks on the tip sheet for the day? And I didn't really think it through because, hey, it's the biggest day of racing. People want my picks. They hammered every horse I had, and it just killed me. There was a horse I had that was 8-1 morning line that went off 3-2. It was all favorites. And you know when it's all favorites, I got no shot. Even with that, seventh race, I have a chance to get back to about $1,700 because I've got it all invested. And one of the best turf riders in the world gave me one of the best rides worst rides in the history of the world and round up finishing third in a race he should have been second, which would have gotten me right back in it. And then I would have crushed the last three races. So it was just a matter of I needed one little bit of luck and didn't get it. But, I mean, you know, I everything I did I thought were well-thought-out plays. They just didn't work out, and that's okay. But I do feel better about the next one I'm going to play, which is not going to be here, and people won't have my picks.
There you go. That always helps.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm getting 5-2s hammered down to 3-5 and stuff like that. And it's just like, you know, there was one exacta that paid $2.20. And I can't win like that. I mean, I have to have in one race that had long shots by then, you know, that's the one that my guy ran third. And if he said to run second like he's supposed to, I'm a happy camper. So it was fun. It was good to be back into it. I will win one of these this year, maybe two, go to the bank.
All right.
But the track itself, it was just a magnificent day. It was packed. I had a great time, some terrific racing and yeah, it's all good. But yeah, and that's what kind of sucked because I'm trying to focus on that. And then you get the Kobe news. And it's hard to stay focused when something like that happens. Because just thinking, and as the details were dripping out, I'm just like, really? Wow, this sounds even worse and worse and worse. And, you know, it just, I wish people would be more responsible. So he says, Kobe story is like a sports version of 9/11 or JFK. Every sports fan will remember where they were when they heard the news. Yeah, I mean, I probably will.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question. And yeah, my phone was blowing up, and was kind of like, man, what the hell? And then I start seeing it, and I'm like, no, that can't be true. I think that was a lot of people's reaction. And when the TMZ, now TMZ can't be right about this. And sadly, they were.
Not partially.
Yeah, well, they were right about him. They didn't. I don't know how much detail they got into, because that was the first report I saw. And, yeah, so I that one I can't really speak to. But it was, and it cast a pall over things. I mean, everybody around there was saying, man, did you hear about Kobe? And, yeah, it was, it just one of those moments, and not for a good reason.
No. I mean, it's tough, man. And like I said, this is a dude who, this is a guy who had a public image problem and really repaired it completely. To the point where not only was he not looked at as like a shady character anymore, he was like kind of revered as like a dad and a dude, honestly. So, that makes it even worse, because I mean, a lot of guys like that, they never recover. Guys who go through the PR stuff that he did, the legal stuff that he did, and a lot of guys just never get that reputation back. And he's one of the few who did, and it was respected by almost everybody.
Well, and he was kind of a lesson, I think, in that everybody wants to judge people for stuff when people can change, people can get better. We see it all the time. And I think he was an example of that, who, yeah, it wasn't just repairing the PR thing. I mean, I think he really became a better person and a better parent. And, you know, those are the kind of things that, you know, we take for granted in society. We just decide we're going to destroy somebody because they did something, and just decide that, oh, they can never, especially Twitter, they can never recover from this.
Yep.
And you're wrong, Twitter. All right, 713-780-ESPN is your number. 713-780-3776. Turd. Tell the people about Allstate.
Yeah, Allstate siding and windows. Guys, I got to tell you, you want to start the new year off right, do it with Allstate siding and windows. This Houston weather is unpredictable, is kind of a nice way of saying it. And if you're heating or cooling your home, you're probably letting money flow out your window if you don't have good windows. And Allstate Siding and Windows can help you out. They can check your older windows for drafts, see if you're letting money go out there. Call them today. Get your free window inspection. Plus, you'll get 30% off all window packages, $2,500 for all full siding jobs. This is a company that's been around for a long time, which means they're going to be around for a long time. Family owned and operated for over 45 years. Military discounts, senior discounts, the kind of company you want to do business with. Let's just put it at that. You want the best rate? Call Allstate. Allstate Siding and Windows. Give them a call today, 832-204-1936. That's 832-204-1936, or check them on online at allstatesidingandwindows.com. Mike, looking for a bright light. Seagull, what's your life like? Riding on a white.
This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. And for those of you who like to see our guests, now's a good time to go to the Twitch channel.
She just said she didn't want people looking at her.
But just look how far away we are from the cameras.
Then, I mean, she's like, oh, we're not going to be on TV. I look homeless. And we come back and you're like, hey, you want to see our guest? A way to make her feel welcome. Lauren Murphy is our guest, and she will be fighting. God, man, it's coming up so fast. I guess it's 2 weeks from Saturday. So less, like, what are we, about 10 days now?
Yeah, about 13 or something like that.
Oh, 12, it's coming 13. Up fast. But Lauren Murphy going to be fighting on the card UFC 247 down at Toyota Center. And Lauren, are you a full-time Houstonian now? Is that
it's
the deal?
It's true. I'm proud to be one. Yeah.
All right. How's our city treated you so far?
Houston's always been good to me. I've always loved being in Houston from the first time I came here. I came here to meet a coach of mine. He was my coach in Alaska, and he moved to Houston. So I came to Houston in late 2012, and I got my blue belt from him. And then in early 2013, I fought for Legacy out here, and I just kind of made it home for that year for as long as I could. And then I unfortunately had to leave. My husband's in the military, and he got a job out in Arizona. So Arizona was home for a while, but man, as soon as we could, we said deuces to AZ, and we came back to... to H-Town.
And you found my man, Bob.
Yeah, picked him up along the way. Yeah, or he picked me up,
dragging him along, huh?
It's true. He's along for the ride. He's in for the long haul now.
He's hitching his wagon to all the right tractors, it seems like. And you are, we were just talking about this during the break. So you're 11-4. Realistically, I mean, you're maybe a scorecard away from being, you know, 13-1.
Sure.
Or 14-1. I mean, you've had three fights. Sarah McMahon, Liz Carmouche, and Caitlin Chookagian, all top-notch competition. Mm-hmm. That really, scorecards could have gone either way.
Literal title contenders, UFC title contenders, and two of them at bantamweight. So
when you had those three fights, and they always say, don't leave it to the judges. I get it's so easy to say.
It's such a trite thing to say. It really is.
Yeah. Which, by the way, Bob, I never left it to the judges. I went to the second round one time. And it was exhausting. But when you're standing there waiting for the decision in those three fights, did you feel like you'd won all three of them?
Yeah, when I fought Sarah McMahon, I thought, literally, actually, as soon as the bell rang, I went back to my corner, I looked at my husband, I said, we won that, right? And he said, yeah. And then we didn't. That was kind of sad. But I wasn't that sad about that fight because it was my first UFC fight. She was a title contender.
Right.
At the time, her only loss was to Ronda Rousey. I knew I was a huge underdog. So it wasn't, to me, it wasn't a sad event. But when I fought Liz Carmouche, that was heartbreaking. One, because the fight was so weird and it was really boring and I wasn't quite sure how to handle myself in there. And then two, because I was so sure that I had won and I had beat somebody in the rankings and I'd earned my spot. And then when they read Liz's name, I thought, there's no way. Like, they had to have messed that up somehow.
So when you, like you said, you felt like it was a boring fight. It was, I mean, your second fight in the UFC, now you're 0-2. You just had a really boring fight that the judges said you lost. A lot of people don't see a third fight.
Right.
Were you nervous at that point that was pretty much it?
I was, yeah. I was scared, and I decided, like, right then and there, it's never going to happen again. I'm never going to have a boring fight ever again. And then my third fight, I went out there, and we got fight of the night that night. So I was like, there you go.
That's how you get another fight. Yeah. That's how you get another fight. I'm looking at the odds now, and you are installed as a pretty big underdog here. You are plus 280, almost 3-1 underdog. Are you? I take it. I mean, with the names that I've seen, you're used to that position.
I love it. I was the underdog through my entire Invicta career as well. A lot of times at the very beginning of my career in Alaska, I was the underdog, and I prefer it. I like surprising people, and it really frees me up to go out there and just do whatever I want to do. You know, it's really a freeing thing to be an underdog. Honestly, I really like it.
How much attention do you pay to the rest of the division around you? Like, how much fighting are you watching of the girls in your division?
I always enjoy a good girl fight. A lot of times from a fan perspective, I end up watching the fights just because I enjoy women's MMA. And I always have. Ever since I started training, I watched the females fight, and I would think about, like, what if that could be me in there someday? And now it is me in there someday. And I just watch them the way you would watch a peer. You know, like, I try not to be too judgy because I do know how hard it is to be in that cage. And I know what it takes, and I know how quickly things can go the way you don't expect them to go. So I try not to be too judgy when I watch. But, you know, any of those women could be my opponent at any time. But the longer I'm in this game, the more fights that I have, the more my perspective changes, too. And I think I've hit a place where I almost want to say, like, I'm more compassionate towards my other competitors. You know what I mean? I'm not so hard on myself, and I'm not so hard on them either.
There was a fight on the Cerrone-McGregor card where basically the future, Macy Barber, she lost her first fight. I don't think she handled it very well personally. But lost to a grizzled vet, as we'll say, in Roxanne Modafferi. I mean, when you watch those fights, do you find yourself being, I mean, let's face it, at 36 years old, you're one of the seniors on the on the UFC tour. Do you find yourself cheering for the older ladies? Like, these are the chicks have been doing it for a long time. That's who you want.
Absolutely. And so a bunch of things stood out to me about that fight. One, Roxanne looked better than she's ever looked. So I know she's a grizzled old vet. She's been around forever, but she's still getting more athletic and she's still adding to her skill set. So I don't think being like a senior in this division is anything... I don't think it's a detriment, you know. The other thing that stood out to me was, even though Macy may not have handled that very well, she is tough. You know, a lot of women would blow an ACL and quit in a fight. They would just sit down, turn their back, and not fight anymore. And Macy didn't do that. So I think she does deserve some props for that. And she'll learn how to handle her losses. She's still young. She'll come around and she'll start learning how to handle her losses. So the third thing is that I know people think I'm like a real vet in this sport, but the truth is I'm just in my prime. I started so late in this sport. I was a baby when I fought Sarah McMahon. I had only been training 4 years when I fought her, and I'd never been an athlete before. I don't know anybody that has that kind of story, that ascended so fast, got into the UFC, and was fighting title contenders after training in any sport, but much less training in MMA, less than 5 years total.
That's pretty wild. Now, the way that what I always say about women fighters and heavyweights is it's very difficult to find training partners that are your equals.
Yes.
Like there's if you're a top tier heavyweight, there's not a lot of other top tier heavyweights in the world, much less in one city. And you, sure. I mean, you guys are around Derek. It's hard to find guys locally that can really push Derek. I know for women, it's the same thing. There's a maybe 30, 40 elite women in MMA in the country. How many of them live in Houston? Is it hard for you to find competition in training that pushes you to get ready for the fights?
Derek and I just spar together all the time. Oh. We know. I'm just kidding. We can't find training partners, so we work with each other. No, I'm luckier, I think, than Derek in that sense, because I can work with smaller men. I can work with flyweight men. I don't mind working with like women that have less fights than me, or women that are just starting their careers. You know, it gives me a good chance to practice what I need to practice. And usually they have some kind of skill set that pushes me, whether they're, you know, they might be a really good boxer, they might have really good kickboxing. Maybe they have fantastic jiu-jitsu. And so I think you can learn a lot from pretty much any training partner that you get. But at my size, I'm really fortunate to have a ton of training partners, and I don't really pay too much attention to what level they're fighting at, because they all have something to offer.
You can get something from everybody.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
What would you say at this point is the strength of your game?
I think my strength is that, I think I have a lot. I think one is that I'm really well-rounded. Another is that I'm just so damn tough. Like, I'm one of the toughest chicks I know, to be honest with you. I have a huge heart. I'm really physically strong. I think I'm probably, maybe the strongest 125er in the division. And I went to the UFC Performance Institute not too long ago, and a bunch of tests for strength. They say I'm world leading, and that's compared to other women in my weight class. So the numbers don't lie.
When you fought Sajara, did you feel like you had a physical edge over her?
No, but that I think can be attributed to a few things. One, I had an amazingly terrible weight cut for that fight. I was trying to stay bigger for that fight, and it ended up kind of going backwards. I cut 17 pounds that week, which is just unbelievable at my weight class. It was a really bad idea. I didn't rehydrate well. And I think mentally too, I was just in a really bad spot. I had had a really terrible camp, and I think it was just one of the worst fights I've ever had physically. I was really overtrained, and then had a terrible weight cut. And it turned out to be a real blessing, because I ended up changing everything. Now I have a world-class team behind me. And if you can see the difference between my fight with Sajara and my fight with Mara Barella. And physically, mentally, emotionally, I think it just shows. Like, I don't even have to comment much on it because it looks like two different people fighting between those two fights.
Well, I see you're carrying around a bunch of water.
Yeah.
Which means you're getting there now. How close are we? How are you feeling at this point in the process?
I feel great, and my weight is right on track. I started working with a guy named Andy Galpin, who's a pretty famous strength and conditioning guy. He's a muscle physiologist out of UC Fullerton. And he recommended a nutritionist to me named Matteo Cappadoglio. That's the American way to say his last name. I don't know. In Italian, it sounds much sexier. But
okay, all right.
And Matteo's the man. He's the best nutritionist I have ever seen in my life. And then working with him has just been phenomenal. And the way that he helps me cut weight, the food plans that he puts me on, I get to eat a lot of carbs. I feel super charged up for training. I think my coaches will tell you I've had an amazing camp. And he tells me what weight to be at when I go into fight week. And as long as I'm at that number, I let him handle the rest. And his recharge protocol is on point. And so really, I leave it all up to Matteo now. He is literally the best in the world.
What do you think of Andrea, your opponent? She's 3-1 in the UFC, mm-hmm. coming off her first loss to Joanna Calderwood. What do you think of her as an opponent? Do you think that she? Where do you think you have advantages over her?
Well, we're gonna see. You know, we're gonna really test Andrea. I think she's gonna be a great test for me, but I'm gonna be a good test for her as well. And I'm really expecting her to be in great shape. Bob and I were just talking about how tough she is. She's not going to fold. She's not going to be one of those fighters that gets scared or hasn't been in there before. You know, she does have a lot of experience, and I'm expecting her to punch me and kick me a lot and try to take me down. And
I hate when that happens.
Yeah. I don't, though. I really actually like getting hit in fights.
Because, you're the opposite of me.
Oh, man. I like it because it's like it doesn't really hurt much, and it kind of turns me on. Like, it kind of just gets me going. I know the crowd likes it, and I know that makes it a good fight, and I take getting hit pretty well.
So when I started fighting, I had my jiu-jitsu coach was a guy named Makako, who was
he's a legend.
And legendary for fighting in these fights with no gloves and no yes. no mouthpiece.
Yes.
And
it's like, he's a wild man. Yeah.
So when I decided I was gonna fight, we started working on my striking a lot, and he's like, this, you hit him, he hit you, you hit him, he hit you. And I was like, this doesn't work for me. So I had to go find another striking coach, and I would bring back my striking and be like, hey, this is what I'm trying to do with Mike. How can we work this in? Because the way he was doing, my goal was to hit them a lot and not get hit
yeah,
at all.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the kind of fighter I was, the kind that didn't want to bleed. Yeah. That was my goal.
No, you know, when I first started fighting, I literally, before I even stepped in the cage, my dream was to have a war. I wanted to have a war with somebody because I wanted to know, and I still want it. This is still kind of my mission. I want to find this out. I want to know how much heart I have. I want to know if I can have a war with somebody and still be there at the end and come back. Like, I want it to be like a Rocky style movie where people are like jaws hanging open, like, did not think I could do that, and then I came back and did it. I'm looking for somebody to push me to that point, you know?
You sound like Alex Morano. All Alex Morano talks about is, I want to be in a fight where one of us thinks we might die.
You know what I mean?
It's like, you know, and if it has to be me, it has to be me. But I will fight until I die, and I want my opponent to know I will fight that's just crazy to me. But you guys that's why you guys are on a different level. That's an incredible mindset. Well, Lauren Murphy's been our guest. Best of luck to you through this week. I know that, you know, this is the hardest part, honestly, the next 8-9 days.
The closer we get, though, the happier I am. I really cannot wait to get in the cage and just put on a show for Houston. Houston has been so good to me. I cannot wait to, like, pay it back to them.
My favorite thing was getting on the scale, or getting off the scale,
yes,
really. Like,
yes.
Once that happens, fighting's really actually pretty
it's
easy.
It's true, yeah.
it's trying to train while you're eating only lettuce and drinking water. That's the hard part of fighting. A lot of people don't realize. I'd rather get hit in the face than lose, you know, 22 pounds in 3 days.
It's true. Oh my God. But, 22. Yeah. No, thank you.
Wow. Yeah. No, thank you anymore either. Appreciate the time. Best of luck in the fight. We hope you'll be in here for your next one. Hope you come out of this one a winner.
Thank you. I do too. Thanks.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you, Bob, for coming in as well.
All right. You want to make a little money on her? +255 on my bookie.
Just get you some of that.
Yeah. I just do a little bit on her just to get it going. And you can bet the UFC there. You can bet NBA, Premier League, College Hoops. You want to get in on AJ's College Hoop picks? I will have some hockey overs for you this week. of course. So you can get in on all that. The place to do it, mybookie.ag. And if you haven't signed up, here's what you do. You go to mybookie.ag, and they're going to match your initial deposit 50%, all the way up to $1,000. So you put $2,000 in there, you'll get $1,000 in free money to play with. But you have to use promo code radio to activate the offer. Promo code radio to get that extra money. They've got fast payouts, great promotions, terrific customer service. Anytime you have an issue, they get right back to you. That's what mybookie.ag is all about. And believe me, I've had bad luck with other websites where half the time they'd bounce a check to me or wouldn't even pay me. That doesn't happen with mybookie.ag. They take care of you. All you have to do, use promo code radio. That's promo code radio. Bet, win, get paid. MyBookie.
This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. You are listening to The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we're back on The Blitz. 713-780-ESPN is your number. 713-780-3776 if you want to get in. And Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis coming up at 7 o'clock. Hall of Fame with Booker T and Brad Gilmore at 9. And some breaking news, the Lakers-Clippers game that was set for Tuesday has been canceled. So not really a surprise, probably the right thing to do, but that game has indeed been canceled. So, you know, I think it's I wish they'd canceled everything yesterday, frankly, because it was, you know, I'm sure it was hard for a lot of those guys to even concentrate. But Anthony in H-Town on the Twitch says the first time a game has been canceled since the JFK death. I think there were some cancellations after 9/11.
I think there were too, yeah.
I don't remember specifically. But, yeah. So, I hope she wins. She seems cool.
Did you see the cost of tickets for the Lakers-Celtics on, I guess it's tomorrow night?
The one they just canceled?
Do you know how much they were going for?
Yeah, I saw that.
Almost a grand to get in?
Yeah.
And it's a, I mean, I don't know if they should be canceling games. Like, if anything, they should have been canceling games
yesterday. Yeah.
I don't know that canceling these games make as much sense. And I know they had been, StubHub was donating all their fees for the game to the Vanessa and Kobe Bryant Foundation. So it was like, it had a good cause to it. So it's kind of a bummer that the game's postponed. And I was like, you know, on Sunday, it's one thing. Like, that's, then it's awkward. A few days later, you're talking 72 hours later. It's almost like it's must-see television to watch. And like, you almost hope for LeBron or Kawhi or one of these guys to go out and have some just incredible performance, like Brett Favre after his dad dies type performance, because emotions are running so high. So, I get why they would maybe postpone it. If it were today, I would say it wouldn't make sense to play. Being tomorrow, I think they should have let him go.
Clarification, first time an NBA game has been canceled. Oh, okay. That makes more sense, yeah. Yeah, but there were a lot of sports that were canceled after 9/11, as I recall.
Yeah, a lot of baseball.
And college football. There was, yeah. So that's kind of a, well, it's just kind of a cheesy, it's one of those overly narrowing things down. But yeah, so that's off for tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted to get into LeBron today because got a chance to watch a couple games over the last few days, and man, he's playing at such an incredible level. And you know what? I bet the Lakers to win the title right now.
Well, you're not going to get much value.
No, but I'm pretty sure that they're going to get it done. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776 if you want to get in. And, yeah, we'll, I want to get into the media thing when we come back, just because I think it deserves some time. And it's something that, and I mean, we live in a different world now where, yeah, I mentioned the Princess Di thing and stuff like that. And we went through some of the ones that impacted people, but we're in a different world now with social media and the instant reaction, the instant reporting is totally different than it was back then. And I think that impacts a lot of the ways we look at things.
All right, guys, I got to tell you again about Pro Dunk Hoops, ProDunkHoops.com, the best goals on the market. And the best part about it is it's going to get your kids outside. And not only your kids, I mean, hell, gets me outside every once in a while, to be honest. And it's great because it the whole family can use it. You know, my older son and I will get out there and shoot on 10 feet. And my younger son gets frustrated. He's 7. He can't make baskets on a 10-foot goal. So he can do it himself. Crank it down. You can crank it from 5 feet to 10 feet, just a turn of a handle. And he can make baskets. And the whole purpose is for these kids to have fun. If you're not making baskets, it's no fun. So he has fun, too, when he starts making some baskets. They've got a design to fit your home, your driveway, your backyard. They've got a fully portable version if you've got a picky HOA. The backboard, guaranteed for life. They'll replace it for free if it breaks or cracks for any reason. They've got all the accessories, the court marking stencil, LED lighting, so your kids can play at night. They've got it all at ProDunkHoops.com. See it all, ProDunkHoops.com, or give them a call, 281-351-9822. 'Cause we're going.